Welcome to Hebrew Club, everybody, on this beautiful Friday morning, middle of winter. We are in Psalm 31, and we're right at the end, where the psalmist, having gone back and forth between this condition of being saved and asking for salvation, now kind of exhorts the people, and we begin at verse 24 with the Ehevu. So it's Ehevu et Adonai kol chasidav, emuni notzer Adonai, umeshalem al yeter osei na'ava. And the first one is an imperative. So it's a call imperative from Ahav, masculine plural. All right? Because of the guttural, you get all those hatef shvaz there. So it's love Yahweh, all chasidav, all his devoted ones, or all those devoted to him. We're at Psalm 31, right at the end. Emunim, notice it's from the root aman, and this is a call passive participle. Those who are faithful, those who are firm, those who are faithful, notzer Yahweh. Yahweh notzer, Yahweh guards. So that's a call participle, and notice that the notzer functions, kind of its verbal qualities come in full bloom here in this particular clause. Notice how then the structure of the sentence juxtaposes the chasidim with the emunim there. And you see kind of it's a chiasm, but not quite typical because it starts with an imperative and ends with a participle.
You said emunim was a call passive participle?
Yeah.
And it
uses a substantive.
Okay, and you translated it like as
to be faithful. So those who are faithful. So those who are faithful, Yahweh protects.
So is it like a deponent verb?
It's just a passive participle, and it's used as a substantive.
Okay.
All right. And it's the object of notes there. All right. So notice you're getting a number of different verb forms in this verse because he continues it with the umeshalem, which is a piel participle from shalom, notice, and it means to pay back or to complete. So umeshalem, and he pays back al yeter. Yeter means what is left over, what remains, yeter, what goes over. So he repays over what remains, so more than enough, so to speak. Osei ga'ava, the one who does ga'ava is pride. And you might want to even translate that one with more of an adverbial force, the one who acts arrogantly or haughtily, but it's very woodenly, the one who does ga'ava, does pride. Okay? So again, the whole thing is love Yahweh, all his devoted ones. Those who are faithful, Yahweh, notzer, protects. And he pays back beyond measure, al yeter, the one who does pride or who acts arrogantly. Okay? Any questions about verse 24? All right. Verse 25 then. Chizchu ve'ya'ameitz levav kem. Kol ha meyachalim la Adonai. Chizku. A nice call imperative masculine plural from Chazak. Be strong. Chizku. Be strong. Ve'ya'ameitz. Notice that this is from the root amatz. And in this case, it is a hifil. Notice the patach under the yud characteristic. And then you have that E family vowel as the theme vowel under the mem, and it's shortened, so you don't have the infix, which tells you that it's a volative form or adjusive form. So it would be, let your heart, see levav kem, let your heart, again, be strong or firm. So that amatz and chazak are synonyms, all right? Kol ha meyachalim. That meyachalim is from the root yachal, and notice that it is a PL participle used as a substantive. Everyone who hopes in Yahweh. So be strong and let your heart take courage, is probably how I translate that. Let your heart take courage. Everyone who hopes in Yahweh. Okay. Any questions on those two verses? No, it's good to go? All right, so we can go on to Psalm 32 and get started in this one. This is usually characterized as a Thanksgiving psalm. It's a very beautiful and powerful psalm, as you will see. It's kind of one of my favorites, actually. And notice it is entitled Le David Maskil. And again, that usually is thought of to be a lamentative authorship by David, a maskil. Notice that that's a genre characteristic. We're not quite sure what it refers to. There's a number of psalms that are labeled as maskil. And there's a number of different ideas, you know, as to what it refers to. Something played skillfully or a complex psalm or something like that, or maybe something totally unrelated to that. All right? But anyway, Le David Maskil, and the psalm proper starts in the next line. Ashrei Nesui Pesha Kesui Chata'a. All right. Let's look at the grammar and syntax of this. Notice the first word, ashrei. It's a construct form and it's plural. And this form only occurs in the plural. Sometimes it's used like, I don't know, 46 times in the Psalms or in the Bible, mainly in poetry. And it's always in a plural form when it takes suffixes as well. And notice it's in construct here. And it's usually translated as an exclamatory phrase. This is never said by God. It's always on the horizontal level, man to man. So you would translate, how blessed. Some translate, how fortunate. Okay. Now notice this next little word here, this nesui. You can see that the root is nun and sin, and then it looks like a third hey root, all right? And most suggest that this is a biform with nasa that ends in an aleph, which means to lift up or to raise, all right? There is a textual note on it. Some suggest it's from nasha, which means to forget. So notice it has a shin there rather than a sin. But if you take it as the text is, it is a passive participle in construct with pesha. So if it means to lift up, the passive participle be lifted up. And then I would probably construe the pesha as the subject. How blessed rebellion being lifted or forgiven. This is the word for forgiven then. How blessed transgression or pesha being forgiven. And then kesui, notice it's from the root kasa. Remember that hey is kind of phony on those third hays. And so when you add consonantal suffixes in the perfect, for example, that original yud comes back, and here you get it in the passive participle. And then chata, again, it's in construct, which is kesui, all right? And it means to cover, so being covered, sin being covered. See? So how blessed, transgression being forgiven, sin being covered. Some translate more idiomatically. A lot of translations go, how blessed the one whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. All right, but I just want you to see the kind of syntax of that line, because it's possible to translate it more, he's praising kind of this quality of sin being forgiven. Okay? Notice then the repetition in verse 2. Ashrei Adam lo yachshov Adonai lo avon, ve'ein beruho remiya. Again, you have that construction as an exclamation. How blessed, how fortunate the man. Okay. And now notice, again, as in poetry, you often don't get particles like relative clause indicators. So you have this lo yachshov, and chashav means to consider. This is a simple call imperfect, third masculine singular, yachshov. Yahweh is the subject. So you don't have the asher, but you do have the resumptive pronoun lo. So it's how blessed the man who Yahweh does not consider to him, or maybe against him, lo, avon, iniquity or guilt. Okay? Be'ein beruho, and there is not in his, well, let's go back to ruach. I mean, ruach can have a wide range of meanings. You could translate, is not in his mind, in his nature, in his attitude. Remiya is deceit or treachery. All right? Now, again, commonly, that who's he talking about with the, whose ruach is he talking about? Is he talking about the man's ruach? That's how it's traditionally interpreted. But notice it's a possibility we're also talking about Yahweh, so that when Yahweh forgives, he's not treacherous. Yahweh's ruach. So ruach is used to refer to the inclination of Yahweh, the mind of Yahweh, on a number of occasions, a couple of occasions. I just want to hold that up to you as something to consider as you're thinking through this verse, all right? So in other words, when a person is certain that Yahweh forgives him, he can be certain that Yahweh doesn't lie, that there's no treachery. So there's kind of a nice theme in there. But again, it is much more customary to suggest that this ruach is referring to the person's inner nature. Okay? Any questions about those first two verses? About the grammar or syntax or anything? Okay? Good? All right. Now notice what happens. Again, the psalmist, in the course of his thinking, both in his emotions, he kind of goes back in time a little in verse 3 and kind of a little past history, past experience that he's had. Ki hecherashti balu atzamai beshaagati kol hayom. For, now, hecherashti, charash means to be silent in the call. And so here's a hifil form, hifil perfect first common singular. And I would give it a more active when I kept myself silent. Okay? Balu is, see that that's a third hey root. When you add the vocalic suffix, the hey drops off, that third root letter. So it's a simple call, perfect, third common plural. And it means to be worn out. My bones wore out or became worn out, or were worn out. When I kept silence, my bones were worn out. Atzamai. Bet sha'agati. Sha'aga is a groaning. And so bait is kind of instrumental, or in, or because of, or with my groaning. Kol ha'yom. All day. All right, notice you have two key clauses here, and they seem to kind of focus your attention on what's going to follow. All right? They're not really causal as you are reading the logic of the psalm. So they more focus kind of your attention to what's coming next. All right? Indeed, when I kept silent, I don't know if that's the best translation even or not. Those key clauses are always kind of interesting to consider how they're functioning here. Okay. Any questions about verse 3? All right, verse 4. Ki yomam v'layla tik Bad alai yadeka, nepak lashadi, becharvonei kaitz sela. Okay, for yomam valaila, day and night. I want you to look at this. I mean, it's a very common idiom, right? By day and night. But notice that at the end of yom, you have that kamatz mem, which helps you to see it. This is a construction. Remember, you add that am when you want to make an adverb out of something. So chen means grace. If you want to see, say freely, you say chinam. Rik means empty. Rikam means in vain or vainly. All right. So yomam is by day or daily. So and notice the idiom does not do the same thing with Lila. So by day and night, tikbad, again a call, imperfect. Feminine singular, your hand, yadeka, was heavy upon me. Okay, for by day and night, or day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. Nepak, notice the nifal, perfect, third masculine singular. And then here's a rare word, leshadi. Lashad is only used a couple times in the Bible. One time it seems to mean juice. So here we would say your vigor, you know, your... what, you know, what gives you your strength or vigor, your inner kind of constitution, so to speak.
Kind of like mojo?
Yeah, your mojo. That's maybe one way to say it. Leshadi. So my, yeah, my vigor, my, you know, whatever, what makes you, you know, gives your human life its vigorousness. I don't know. I guess that's the best word. My vigor was poured out. Hafak means to pour out. My vigor was poured out. Becharvone. Cheravon is dry heat. And notice you have this abstract concept here. It's in construct and it's plural. A lot of abstracts are pluralized, and it can, this may mean the concrete manifestations like the, you know, dry winds of the kites of the summer. And the bait can be kind of comparative in the manner of or according to, something like that. Sometimes the bait and the cough can interchange, and that may be what's happening here. All right. Yeah, so notice that at least some manuscripts do have a cough there instead of a bait. But he's comparing what's happening to him inside with dry winds or dry heat of the summer. All right. Questions through verse 4 then?
So you would translate it then as my vigor was poured out like?
Yeah, like or in the manner of, and then you can translate the word there was like or in the manner of the dry summer winds, dry winds of the summer, or the dry heat of the summer. Sometimes it's like the droughts of the summer. So again, it could be referring to the concrete manifestations of the drought condition. Okay. All right. Let's go to verse 5 then. It's kind of an interesting syntax here. Chatati odiaka va avoni lo kisiti amarti ode ale pesha'ai la'aronai ve'ata nasata avon chatati sela. My sin, now again, notice the shifts here. It's kind of interesting how he's shifting. My sin, odiaka, notice that that's from yada, first yud verb, imperfect form, first common singular, and you have that o suffix when you have first yud verbs, remember? And yada means to know in the call, so in the hifil, to make known. So my sin, I will make known to you. All right? So notice the suffix there. And avoni, my guilt, lo kisiti. That is from kasa. And notice it is a PL form this time. We had the call passive participle in verse 1. Here it's a PL, perfect, first common singular. When you add the consonantal suffix, the third yud reappears. And you have that infixed hirik yud look to it. All right. Notice the variation in tenses here. All right. Notice also in verse 4, I mean, I just want to show you the variation of tenses. It's kind of happening syntactically. Because we got to verse 3, you get that perfect tense, hecherashti, notice, and he's going back in time, so we translate past tense quite naturally. In verse 4, tikbad is an imperfect. We still gave it a past tense translation as if it was a preterite, because he seems to be referring back to this experience he had, right? This experience of feeling the wrath of God on him. All right. Now, again, he switches back in the second line of verse 4 to the nepak, to another perfect tense. All right. Day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength or vigor was poured out like or in the manner of the droughts of the summer. Okay. Now he seems to have switched to a reflection on what he decided to do. And this amarti in the second line seems to, I would say, play double duty for the line before it and the line after it. So notice, this is what he said. I would translate this. My sin I will make known to you, and my iniquity I will not hide, I said. See? And then I said, I will confess to you. Everybody see how I'm construing the syntax? So odeh is from yada, another hifil, means to thank or to praise or to confess. I said, I will confess now. Notice this form, ale. This is a form you find in poetry for the preposition all. All right? And it's you have the Seirei Yud. The editors divide the line here for some reason, which I don't think you can do. It all goes together. I said I will confess concerning Pesha'ai, my transgressions. Confess about my transgressions. La Yahweh, to Yahweh. All right, so everybody see the syntax. If you see that Amarti is doing double duty, he's actually switching in verse 5 to, okay, in the midst of his feeling the hand of God on him. And notice in verse 4 it has these symptoms of, this is what it feels like inside of me. I'm drying up inside. Okay? So he said, my sin I will make known to you, and my iniquity I will not hide. Again, he's switching back and forth in tenses. I said, I will confess to you my transgressions. Now, here's the next line, depending on how you want the decision you make. See that nasata? It's a perfect tense, call perfect. If you connect this to what he has been saying, you would translate that as a future, just like kisiti. I said, I will confess to you my transgression. Confess about my transgressions to the Lord, and you will forgive the iniquity of my sin. In other words, he's certain of it. Or you could separate this line a little from the previous. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. And lo and behold, you forgave the iniquity of my sin. And that's how it's normally construed. All right? Which brings up a lot of interesting questions. How do you know he was forgiven? How did the Lord reveal this to him? See, all those kinds of things are worth discussing in another forum here. I just want you to see that the interpretive decisions or translation decisions that you make are going to depend on how you see the lines being read or following or connecting to each other. Okay, any questions through 5?
Interesting observation. The root kasa, when God is the subject of it, and when the sinner is the subject of it, the difference.
Yeah.
When God covers and we cover.
Yeah.
The difference.
No? Yep, that's right. Yeah, the whole different meaning, right. Covers a good thing when God does.
Yeah.
When your sin is covered.
We are counseling.
Yeah. So you're supposed to uncover your sin and let God do the covering of it, right? Right. If we try to cover it, we're in trouble. That's nice. I like that. Any other questions or thoughts? Okay, let's go to verse 6. Alzot yitpalel kol chasti de leka le'et metzo. Okay, now I'm going to continue reading. Rak le'shetef maim rabim elav lo yagi'u. Okay. On account of this, notice the zot is feminine. Why? Does anyone know why?
Is he referring to sin?
He's referring to what has happened before. So when you're referring to a more abstract idea or situation, it's customary for the Hebrew to use the feminine demonstrative. So on account of this, namely what he has been saying, this experience of being under the wrath of God and then God forgiving him, okay, yitpalel, let, notice this is from palal, and it's a hitpael. And even though it's not first in the clause, again, as a general rule, when something is a cohortative or a volative, it usually occurs first in the clause. Here it's not. But again, that's only a general rule of thumb, especially in poetry. So on account of this, let kol chastid, let every devoted one pray. So again, he's moved. So when you say on account of this, well, on account of the fact that he experiences great forgiveness, all right? So now he's exhorting, see? Let every pious one or devoted one pray, Eleka, to you. Now, notice what happens in these next three words. Eight means time. Eight is time. And metzo means to find. And it's pointed like an infinitive construct, right? Notice that the Masoretes, actually divide the line between mezzo and rock. And I think it's important you guys see that. It's trying to deal with kind of a problematic text. So if we do that, if we do it according to the Masoretes, it would be, let every devoted one pray to you at the time of finding. A very compressed statement. At the time of finding. Namely, there is this idea, remember in, I think it's Isaiah 55, call upon him where he allows himself to be found. That's a Niphal form for matzah. But also, Psalm 46 is the one I want to call your attention to. God is our refuge and strength, a help in trouble. He is easily found as a help in trouble. Okay, you know, notice how we say that with such power without asking ourselves the question, what do you mean? Where is he in time of trouble? Right? The common complaint is, God's nowhere in time of trouble. So the question that the psalmist assumes, God's easily found. All right. Well, the answer to this of Psalm 46 is that he's found in the sanctuary, in the temple. That's where you find the God of grace, the God that's for you. So here, and remember, you know, Jesus reminds us that, you know, he was there ministering to his people. He went up and he's going to come again. But he has not left himself without a witness, and not left himself without a place to be found, where he is to be found. And namely, for us, the answer, of course, is in his word and sacraments around which we gather to find him, to seek his forgiveness, his word for our lives, all those kinds of things. So, you know, what he said, let everyone pray to you at the time of his finding. When he can be found, at the time that he can be found. All right? A very maybe reticent echo reference to the sanctuary, but just a reminder to us that the Lord has allows himself to be found where he has put his name. Remember, I put my name there, he said in Deuteronomy. That's where you can seek me and find me. And remember, all the language of the psalmists is they're going to go to the sanctuary. Why? To seek Yahweh, i.e. to worship him, right? When you seek him, you find him. See, we use that language kind of all the time, and I'm suggesting that that's what he's saying here, but in a very compressed form. All right. If you do that, then rock will start the next line. And it would mean, in this adverbial sense, surely, leshetef maim rabim, surely, at the flood, shetef means flood, at the flood of maim rabim, at the flood of many waters, to him, lo yagi'u, they will not touch. Again, that's the Niphal from Naga. Okay? And it's a hifil, notice, from Naga, hifil, third masculine plural. So, surely, at the flood of many waters, to him they will not touch. So the whole verse, on account of this, let every chassid pray to you at the time of finding. At the time you can be found is how I would do it maybe in a longhand English. Surely, at the flood of many waters, to him, namely the chassid, they will not touch, namely the waters. All right? Some translations amend that mezzo rock and suggest, notice you have some suggestions there under 6a, verse 6a, and suggest matzor or matzok. Matzor means siege, so at the time of siege, or matzok means at the time of distress. That's why you'll see some translations translating like that. So they will suggest that there's, and there is a textual issue there, and they'll solve it by taking out that resh and kind of seeing a different noun form there. Okay? Any questions through 6? We're going to stop here today so everybody can get to their classes and the rest of the day. Any other questions? All right. Next week, then, we will finish up this psalm and get into 33. We're moving right along. It's another great psalm.